Have you noticed that for most of the world around us, the Christmas season has been over for a while? Families, homes, and stores start taking down their trees and stockings and lights on December 26th. And by New Year's Eve, celebrations and decorations of Christmas are a faint memory for many people. And yet we as a church are still celebrating the birth of our Messiah. This morning we celebrate an ancient holiday in Christianity, the Feast of the Epiphany. As you can see around you, the Christmas season is not quite over yet. The wise men who have been hanging out all season over here on the organ have finally arrived and are part of the nativity scene. And we, like millions of other Christians around the world, are greeting the arrival of the wise men with joy and excitement. Epiphany is an ancient celebration known in some parts of Appalachia as Old Christmas, because it happens on the date that was celebrated as Christmas in the ancient Julian calendar. I've always loved Epiphany, even as a child, but I grew to appreciate and love it even more during my time studying abroad in college. I spent a fall semester in Spain, in the town of Granada, down in the south, living with a family who ran a bread bakery. The family had three sons of elementary and middle school age, and those three boys made it their mission to educate me about everything in Spain, from counting pesetas, this was before the arrival of the euro, to dancing the Sevillana, which is a local dance a little like flamenco, to rolling my R's in Spanish, which I'm still not very good at. And as November came and went that fall, the boys taught me about Dia de los Reyes, their favorite day of the year. They celebrated Christmas in Granada, but it was mainly a religious holiday, a time to go to church and pray and sing. Los Reyes, as they called it, was the exciting celebration because it was the day they received most of their gifts. Like children everywhere, these boys debated about the best gifts and talked about what they hoped to receive. But I was surprised to hear them talk nearly as much about what they were planning to give others, including their parents, their grandmother, their neighbor, and their neighbor Blanca. And as they told me more, I learned that Los Reyes, the gift-giving holiday, was celebrated on Epiphany, in honor of the wise men who brought gifts to the baby Jesus. What a fitting way to celebrate. Our scripture this morning is a familiar story to many of us, the tale of wise men from the east who followed a star to Jerusalem looking for the king of the Jews who had been born in nearby Bethlehem. It's funny how this story from Matthew has become mixed up with Luke's story of the birth of Jesus in the minds of many Christians, as if the shepherds and the wise men were coming and going in and out of the stable all on the same night. In reality, these are two completely different birth stories, told by different authors, writing for different audiences and different reasons. Matthew's birth narrative is full of wealthy characters, a king, the chief priests, and a group of men with enough wealth to travel a long distance following a star. How very different from Luke's story of a poor, exhausted couple, a baby born among animals, and a bunch of dirty, smelly peasants who tended sheep for a living showing up to visit the new baby. Matthew's story of the birth of Jesus was directed at a largely Jewish audience, and it was probably surprising to those who heard it. These men who traveled so far to visit the baby weren't Jewish leaders or even Jews themselves. And yet they were the ones, according to Matthew, who greeted this child with joy. This is a story about God's grace. God gives grace freely, and God gives that grace to everyone, Jews and Gentiles alike. So what do we actually know about the wise men of Matthew's gospel? These men were probably part of a priestly class of experts in the occult arts, such as astrology and dream interpretation. The Greek word that is translated wise men in some versions of the Bible has also been translated as astrologers, or in one source even wizards or sorcerers. We don't know exactly where these men came from other than the East. Some biblical scholars believe they were from Persia or Babylon. In any case, they journeyed a long way to follow that star, find the new Messiah, pay homage to him, and present their gifts. And they were definitely not part of the Jewish faith. Over the more than 2,000 years since Jesus was born, stories and legends have grown up around the wise men, and Christians have filled in details that are not in Matthew's gospel. We don't actually know that there were three wise men. We only know they gave Jesus three different types of gifts. It was not until the 700s that medieval Irish sources gave these men names and descriptions, and you see them kind of reflected in our nativity scene. Melchior, an old man with white hair and a long beard who brought gold. Balthazar, a beardless man with a ruddy complexion who brought frankincense. And Gaspar, a dark-skinned and heavily bearded man who brought myrrh. These are the three wise men that we see depicted in much of our art, many of our nativity scenes. These same Irish sources added their own interpretations to the gifts. Gold for royalty, incense for worship and divinity, and myrrh for death and burial. Symbols of Christ the King, Christ the divine Son of God, and Christ who was destined to die and be buried at the height of his ministry. These details add color to the story, but we have no idea if there's actually any truth to them. What we do know is that these wise men, who made a career of studying the stars, observed something unexpected, a star where there had not been a star before. And as Kim mentioned, probably a very bright star. And this was no ordinary star, but a miraculous star that came from God and signaled to them the arrival of a new king. Without doubt or hesitation or question, they dropped everything and followed this star. And this star, God's miraculous sign, did not behave like any other star they had ever seen. It moved ahead of them, guiding them to Jerusalem at exactly the right pace for them to keep up with it. When they got to Jerusalem, while they were trying to find out more information about the baby king they were seeking, the star stopped moving and stayed in place. When they had the information they needed and were ready to go on, the star began moving again. It kept moving ahead of them all the way to Bethlehem, and then stopped moving again when it was over the house where Jesus and his family were. Very unusual behavior for a star. And a reminder to the wise men and to us that this was no ordinary star, but rather a sign of God's grace. The wise men may have been surprised when the star appeared, but they recognized it as a sign from God. They dropped what they were doing in their everyday lives, and they followed God's guidance to find this most important child. We don't know exactly how long they traveled because we don't know exactly where they were coming from. Some sources say the child Jesus may have been close to 2 years old by the time they arrived. Again, depending on exactly where they came from. The trip took faithfulness and courage. It wasn't an easy or short journey. It was probably exhausting and lonely and likely dangerous in some places. And yet the wise men kept following that star. They recognized God's grace and set out entirely on faith at a great cost to themselves, both in time and in money. Last Sunday, Richard gave us three challenges for the new year, the first of which was to have faithfulness in challenging situations. Perhaps this story can help us as we seek to live out that challenge. We, the community of faith gathered at First Christian Church, may not be called on to travel long distances, but we are sure to face challenges as we continue to discern how to share God's grace, especially with people we don't know yet who desperately need a message of hope. As Richard and I have preached many times, there's a big world outside our doors, a world full of people who need connections and relationships. A world where we can be the good news. Little actions, like meeting for dinner at Talpa's in December, are first steps, But there's so much more we can do and so much more God needs us to do. Stepping outside our comfort zone, spending time with people who are different from us, listening more than we talk, all of these things are challenging and scary. How can we act more like the wise men? How can we recognize God's surprising and unexpected signs of grace? And how can we respond faithfully, knowing God is with us? These are some of the biggest questions that face us as a congregation in 2023 and beyond. But it's also important to remember that the journey isn't the end of the story of the wise men. It's also important to remember what happened when they arrived at the house where Jesus and his parents were. How did they respond? With celebration and joy and praise. They paid homage to the child. In some versions, they bowed down and worshiped him, and they gave him gifts. They understood that they were foreigners, non-Jews, from far away, and yet they had received God's grace. They got to meet the Messiah. God's grace was there for the wise men, just as God's grace is here for everyone we know, you and me, our neighbors down the street, the children in Granada, Spain, who celebrated Los Reyes this past Friday, our Jewish and Muslim and Buddhist and atheist and agnostic siblings, everyone. God's grace is given to us. We don't have to ask for it. We don't have to do anything to earn it. Our job is to respond to that grace like the wise men did, with joy, celebration, excitement, and to help others see and celebrate God's grace in their own lives. January tends to be a time of year when we look at the world more seriously. The old year has ended, and we stop to consider what we accomplished and what we left undone. A new year has started, and society tells us it's time to buckle down, make resolutions, and commit to change what we don't like about ourselves and our lives. Save more money, get your house organized or clean or renovated, read self-improvement books, spend less time on social media, eat more vegetables, give up alcohol, stop eating sweets, drink more water, try a new weight loss program or join a gym or buy a Peloton. All of these are admirable goals, and maybe you've chosen one or two of them as your goals for 2023. But what I think is missing from this suggested list of goals and ideas and resolutions is a sense of excitement. When we approach the world with such seriousness and determination, we may get things done, but we risk missing and overlooking the little moments of joy, of excitement, of celebration. So instead of asking you what you've resolved to change this year, I'm asking you, and I would love to know, what you're most excited about in the year that's just starting. And as a church, where do we hope to find joy, excitement, and celebration in 2023? Like the wise men, we may be surprised by God's grace and called to do challenging things when we least expect it. And like the wise men, we may find joy and grace in following God's call. It's scary, it's exciting. Are you ready? Are we ready? Thanks be to God for God's grace. Amen.